Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show, a podcast which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm really happy to have as my guest today Art Cullen, who many of you are aware of and know. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author of a book about Storm Lake, which is where he owns and publishes and writes for a local newspaper, a thing that, I really miss more of, having community newspapers. Art's written a new book that you should be aware of. It's pretty good, and I just finished reading it, and he's here to talk about it. It's called Dear Marty, We Crapped in Our Nest, Notes from the Edge of the World. Art, that's an interesting title. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, Robin.
I joked with you when I reached out, and this as a Seinfeld fan, this sounds like Art Cullen's Festivus screed. It's pretty interesting. It's a compilation of some of your work that's been put together. But what motivated you at this time to write this book?
Well, my friend Marty Case, my high school buddy, who now lives up in the Twin Cities, we had contemplated writing a book together, and we shopped it around New York, and it didn't get any bites. So I took the sample chapter called The Corn Gospel and said, you know, this is too good just to throw away. I got to do something with it. And this friend of mine, Steve Semkin from Ice Cube Press, he's a one-man band publisher and Eager Beaver. And anyway, he'd been bugging me to put together a book of columns and stuff. And so I spun a bunch of essays around this sample chapter and called it a book. And it is a screed, actually. And the title reflects the fact that Iowa's gone backwards light years in just recent time.
When did this start? And, you know, I was thinking about it this afternoon before we came on. Did the political change predate the economic change, or did the economic change kind of drive through the political change, or are they not related?
Oh, I think they're very much related. And I think the economic change is absolutely driving the political change. And in Iowa, because Iowa voted for hope and change with Obama, and it never came. And so then they said, screw it. Might as well vote for Trump. At least he'll cut our taxes. And I think that's an oversimplified analysis of what's happened in the last several years in Iowa.
You know, I think
we've become radicalized to the right.
Yeah. I interviewed Jeff Kaufman, the state Republican chair, a year or two ago, and you know, he traced the political change to 16. I actually feel like it goes back to 14 when Ernst was elected over Braley. It kind of prompted the start
to the Tea Party, really, you know.
Yeah.
The Tea Party insurrections really started driving the Republican takeover of rural Iowa in particular. I can remember Tom Harkin visiting Storm Lake and once visiting a community health center that he had helped fund. And he was very proud of it. And we were happy to have him here that day. And a bunch of Tea Party protesters showed up and started heckling him. And he'd never encountered that before in Iowa, honestly, to be heckled like that. And it took him aback. And so I say it was back in the Tea Party days when you know, things started to get a little nastier.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the chapter called The Corn Gospel. That's a good place to start as any, because I think that kind of provides a foundation for the book. So The Corn Gospel, that's a pretty interesting choice of words.
Well, yeah, corn is a religion in Iowa, and everything we do revolves around it. And you know, the Corn Gospel chapter describes how We approached genetics and dominion, that, you know, how we view our role within and against the landscape and how we've overcome it. And in so doing, have sown the seeds for our destruction environmentally, because we cannot sustain the agricultural production system that we currently have.
It's I've had guests on who have talked about this, and but it seems as though is it fair to just say that the Republican position is voluntary efforts? Or, you know, I've had Republicans on my show who say, oh, we care very much about this, but it's just a different approach. And it's certainly, is it just a matter of urgency in addressing this? Is that the difference? Or what do you think?
No, I think it's a philosophical difference in terms of, I think the Farm Bureau Republican types in Iowa believe that you should produce. And they used to believe that the government should get out of the way and let us feed the world. Well, that hasn't really worked out for anybody. We've lost generations of family farms in the last 40 to 50 years, especially during the farm crisis. Rural communities have been hollowed out. And there were fewer farmers than ever. And the people who work in town are making half as much, relatively speaking. And that's what's driving the politics, is there's a lot of resentment toward the system and toward the elites who control that system. And it's Democrats who are perceived to be the elites.
That's sure a change from the old days. I feel like I talk nostalgia a lot, but I guess that's because of my age. But just for our listeners, I mean, the reason I like your book Storm Lake so much is because I actually live outside of Monmouth, where there's a meatpacking plant, and we have immigration, and there's a lot of comparisons there. My dad was a union official with the old meat cutters union, which you mentioned. I've seen the same things here. I'll ask this in fairness to people who may have different views, but are we guilty a little bit here of nostalgia art, of just wishing things would have stayed the same? Or are we arguing against progress?
There's some racism involved too, in that nostalgia. You know, we wish we were all white again, and our governor, you know, talks like that, although she doesn't act like that. But we have become an unwelcoming state, even though we still depend on and to a certain degree exploit immigrant labor. Storm Lake is a much more interesting and vibrant place than it was when I was growing up in 1975, when there was one black guy in town and a gay hairstylist, and Latinos came through as migrant laborers working seasonally on turkey production back when turkeys used to be raised outdoors. It's a completely, now 90% of Storm Lake's elementary school are children of color. That's a beautiful thing in so many ways. Relatively speaking, again, the people who work in meatpacking are making half as much as they did when your dad was working with the Amalgamated Meat Cutters. And he could afford a motorcycle and a wet bar back then, couldn't he? He sent you through college, probably.
He sent all three of us to college, and a lot of the workers there had cabins on the Mississippi River, boats.
And why shouldn't they? They worked their asses off.
Right. That leads to the obvious question. We're in the realignment we're under, politically, that a lot of these same working class voters, as our listeners know, we've talked about this a lot on this show over the years. have switched their allegiance from the Democrats to the Republicans. Is that, I mean, there's elements in the Democratic Party that look down on them and say, you're not voting your own interests and all this. But I mean, you live there, you talk to a lot of people. Is it, what's behind the dynamics on that, do you think?
Well, one thing is there's no presence either of Labor or the Democratic Party in Northwest Iowa, and at least where I live. And I suppose the same thing would be true in those famously blue turned red places like Clinton and Ottumwa, et cetera, that there's just no Democratic presence. And when Tom Harkin got beat, or excuse me, retired, you know, a lot of, and then Tom Vilsack went off to Washington, D.C., and a lot of wind went out of the sails of Iowa Democrats. And the party hasn't had its act together ever since. And now it's been abandoned by the Democratic National Committee. And so the Democratic Party in Iowa needs help to become a viable factor again. It appears that maybe they're attracting the attention and resources they need heading into the midterm elections here. Rob Sand, the gubernatorial candidate, has at least $10 million, and you know that's serious.
You get a sense that the Democrats are you know, if Sand read a book like yours, that there's an attention to these issues, the water issue in particular, which to me enormous implications for the future of Iowa. And I don't need to tell you, yet, you know, a lot of young people are leaving, and how to get them back staying there, that's going to determine the future of the state, as you know.
Yeah, and right now, Sand's been kind of dancing around a lot of those issues, water in particular, saying he wants to learn more about it and he'll have a plan out in due time. While he's working on his plan, at least he could be sympathetic. you know, and he's so afraid of being perceived as being anti-agriculture you know, and only 8% of the population in Buena Vista County is associated with that, is lives on a farm, you know.
And
we're a rural county.
Yeah, and it seems like Democrats don't get the votes of farmers.
Right. And they're as concerned about how they're getting raped by the chemical companies as the people in Des Moines are concerned about the poison they're drinking in their water. Nobody's happy about it, but they're all chained into the system.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to break free from, especially when the entire apparatus of our state is in the clutches of agri-industry. Starting with the Farm Bureau and the Agribusiness Association of Iowa, et cetera. The people who hold all the levers are, you know, from agribusiness. And the result is the most polluted surface water in America, a steadily declining number of family farms, and they just bulldozed the main street in Pomeroy, Iowa.
And that I've read about questions about the cancer rate in Iowa. Is increasing, and is it, am I wrong that it's one of the leading ones in the nation?
Yeah, Iowa is tied with Kentucky for having the second highest cancer rate in the nation, and it's the only state with a rising cancer rate. And also people in Northwest Iowa are most apt to have prostate or breast cancer, and that coincides with the fact that Northwest Iowa also has the densest concentration of livestock in North America. We live in a cloud of hydrogen sulfide.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today, very delighted to have as my guest Art Cullen, who many of you know, winner of the Pulitzer Prize for his book called Storm Ike, where he lives, owns and publishes a newspaper, believe it or not. They do still exist, community newspapers. He writes, he's a very provocative writer, and I'm sure many of you have seen or read his work. And His latest work is a book, which you ought to go pick up. It's called Dear Marty, We Crapped in Our Nest, Notes from the Edge of the World. And if you know art, it's got only his kind of unique blend of humor, but also reporting and analysis and opinion in this that I think makes it worthwhile.
Thanks.
You know, you're welcome. It's interesting what's going on right now, Art, with some of the contradictions of some of the policies that the president has come out for. I mean, in Iowa, almost seems to me, I was thinking about this in preparation too, that Iowa's almost like a laboratory here for what's going on with the tariff issue, plus the immigration issue, and the economic contradictions. And I just read today where soybean farmers are scared to death because China's cut off imports of soybeans and due to Trump's tariffs. You talk in the book about some farmers that are doing things differently, but do you see any seeds of hope that things are maybe shifting just a little bit, or no?
Well, yes, I see that things are shifting. Whether it's hopeful or not, I'm not sure. But there's definitely things that are shifting, as the Ogallala Aquifer, for example, in around the Panhandle, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, where what over 30% of the nation's cattle come from, is going to be dry in 10 years. Those cattle are already shifting north into Iowa. There's a new meatpacking plant being built in southwest Iowa. There's new meatpacking plants going up in South Dakota as a result of climate change. And there is change happening because there's still, it's getting warmer and wetter here in Iowa, and we still have water. That's the main change I see is the migration of agricultural practices. When you can't grow corn in Kansas anymore, and you won't be able to grow it in southern Iowa in 30 years, that's going to require a real transformation in how we approach our main enterprise, that is growing our own food. And nature is going to force these changes. There's just no question about it, and there's no avoiding it. When you saw, fields on fire in California's San Joaquin Valley and ripping out pecan groves, et cetera, our food system is changing. Nobody is paying attention to it, but they're complaining about high food prices. Just went up, what was it, another 0.5% this month?
Yeah.
And there's a reason beef prices are so persistently high. And part of it is tariffs, that they can't get Mexican beef anymore to slaughter at Tyson plants in Amarillo. So there's a lot of factors at play. The biggest one is climate.
One of the chapters for our listeners that you wrote was a trip out west you took, and you're referencing a lot of things here that you learned on that trip, which again was some great investigative journalism, unless it was just a vacation or doubled. But
What I did is with a buddy of mine, we drove out to Surf City, USA, and back out to LA, Huntington Beach, California, to experience climate change in three different time zones, central, mountain, and west. And we stopped in Colorado at a sale barn and talked to cattle producers who were actually selling out their herds because of drought. And one guy was selling his prize donkey because he couldn't afford to have it eating and competing with the cattle. So that's how dicey it was getting in the foothills of the Rockies, which is a major cattle producing area, and near Trinidad, Colorado. you really witnessed for how ethanol plants had were abandoned around Colby, Kansas, because they can't grow corn anymore. Even with irrigation, they can't grow corn anymore in parts of western and southwestern Kansas. And that is a major economic factor that very few people are paying attention to. But that's why we have higher beef prices.
I've seen the maps, the meteorological maps of how our weather is changing, and a lot of the weather that was in the Oklahoma, Kansas area is, like, for example, is moving up to Iowa, Illinois, and it's all shifting north, and we're all experiencing this. Right. There's no getting away from it, and it's still, I think, and I'm sure you find it too. There just seems a resistance to wanting to believe in this. Is it political? Is it this is all a Democratic plot? Is it stubbornness or economic concerns or what?
Well, I think it's chiefly economic concerns that we want cheap food on one hand, and so we're producing it at industrial scale, and that is the essential problem of Iowa. And at the same time, we're going to be challenged by nature. We are being challenged currently. Iowa's just come out of 5 years of drought, very uncommon. How long can you continue to grow corn in a petrochemical base without rain? And when it gets to over, several days over 90 degrees during the key tasseling period, how long can you grow corn even in Iowa? And none of us are paying attention to it because we want to believe that we can just go on the way we are. It's an easy life to run a combine 3 weeks and a planter 4 weeks over 1,000 acres and then go down south. We can't do that anymore. I think nature's sending us the signals that we just can't operate this way anymore.
And you make the point of saying
the Tyson pork plant in Storm Lake is consuming 2 million gallons of water a day. 2 million gallons a day. About 13,000 hogs are slaughtered every day there. Can you imagine? And then there's a turkey plant that's using another 800,000 gallons a day. That's coming from our aquifers. How long can we continue to do that?
I wanted to ask about immigration too, because we just had the raid on the South Korean plant, strangely enough, where they're investing in the United States, but yet the administration ordered a raid and apparently deported a bunch of South Korean workers who were there on visas helping, or I think reportedly most of them were, maybe some of them weren't, but they were investing in a facility here. Iowa's very dependent on immigrants for its economy. Because I know you do old-fashioned reporting, you go out and talk to people on the other side, you don't need to be told about that because you do it. Is there an understanding there about the economic contradictions a little bit of the actions of the administration?
People in meatpacking are terribly nervous. The line workers are downright afraid, and management is very concerned about a raid. And because it doesn't matter if you have papers or not, as we found out, you're going to get rounded up. That happens in Storm Lake. Storm, you shut down this plant in Storm Lake, meat prices go up 50% at the meat counter. Or you shut down the plant in Waterloo. Same thing. We know that happened in the pandemic. And I think that there's an understanding that they cannot raid Tyson's meat plants because they haven't been raided. And if you want to go for the low-hanging fruit, you go to Waterloo and Storm Lake, right? They picked out an independent processor in Omaha, and they took out some Cubans out of a JBS plant, but the JB in Ottumwa, JBS is Brazilian, but they have not raided a Tyson plant, and I'm not aware that they've raided a Smithfield plant. And I think they're pretty much leaving the food industry alone, and they've intimated as such. Trump himself said he wanted to go easy on food production workers, which of course is hypocritical. But
I got time for one more question. I got about 2 minutes here. But what I hear around my area is that there are some regrets among some people, it seems, in the middle, that moderate Republicans, independents, are voting for Trump. But boy, they're not really ready to hand it over to Democrats either, because the Democrats are in such disarray. The other thing I think about Iowa is you at least have fair maps. I mean, a lot of places are gerrymandered, and the voters there have voted for a lot of these policies indirectly. I mean, what would you advise? The Democrats aren't visible in northwestern Iowa, as you said. What would you advise them to do to kind of get back, become more viable in Iowa? I mean, I think it can happen. I believe in cycles, but what's got to happen for this to take place?
Well, I think that they have to start organizing. Barack Obama proved what you can do with organization, with Organizing for America. And as soon as he won his second election, Organizing for America was never heard from again. But he carried Iowa twice. And against the odds, his second time up, too. It wasn't clear that he was going to win Iowa, but organization carried the day. And if you don't have a presence, you don't have organization. And so, you know, the Democrats really got their butts kicked during the pandemic, and they got these super huge leads in the legislature when the Democrats didn't go out door knocking and the Republicans did. And they're still suffering for that.
My guest today on Heartland Politics has been Art Cullen. He is a winner of the Pulitzer Prize for his book, Storm Lake, and he's written a new book, Dear Marty, We Crapped in Our Nest, Notes from the Edge of the World. Go get a copy. I think you'll enjoy it. It provides a lot of interesting nuggets from Art's writing over the years, chronicling what's going on in Iowa, and you'll get some laughs out of it as well. Art, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.